This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Otipoti, Dunedin, and I am joined, I think she's still in Christchurch, by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. We've got big news, but we're not talking about it. So if you hear happiness coming out of Mawira's voice, there's good reasons for it, but we're recording on the 11th of October. Maybe I'll have to slot in later what the good news is. Anyway.
Yeah, I think we should have to.
Who are we introducing today?
Sam, it is my absolute pleasure to introduce another one of our amazing students in the Contemporary Issues in Sustainable Practice paper, Tang Nguyen. Tang, it is absolutely wonderful to have you on the show today, so that everybody can get to share what we get to experience in class. So welcome and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Sam and Mawira, for having me on the podcast today. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
It is our pleasure. Where did you grow up?
Yes, so I'm a Vietnamese. I was born in Hanoi, the capital of Vietnam, and I have been there for 26 years already, and this is like my first time like studying and living outside of Vietnam, so it's kind of an experience for me, I guess. So far, I'm enjoying in New Zealand, especially like the Kiwis and like people here. I feel like I'm just at home, you know? Yeah.
What was it like growing up there?
Yeah, so the experience of like growing up in Vietnam is like you surrounded with people and with amazing food, I guess, because that's the only like things I remember right now, because I'm striving for like Vietnamese food, to be honest. So far like 25 years I'm enjoying the food, like I'm really obsessed with like Vietnamese food, to be honest. And I see no difference at all comparing like the living conditions, especially in like Dunedin and the in Hanoi as well. But so far, yeah, enjoying both places.
If I go to a Vietnamese food place,
yep,
what should I try that I probably wouldn't otherwise?
For sure, it's like our traditional dish. You're gonna love it. Like in the first place, you try it. So I recommend like every my friends or like Kiwi's friend or like others friend as well. Like the first thing you need to try in Vietnam is pho, for sure.
We shall do that. What did you want to be when you grew up?
So in my childhood, I want to be like a rocket like scientist, to be more about like designing rockets, and because I watch a lot of movies back then, like, and I really admired like people who work behind the scenes of like creating a rocket. So I really want to become like a scientist, but growing up, and I experienced like other stuff, and I realized like I don't have the talents and I don't have like the gift to become like the scientist in the field. So yeah, so life just shift to you to like another different majors. Yeah.
So what did you study for your undergrad?
For my undergrads, I'm studying finance, which is really different with like what I'm pursuing right now, the sustainable business. But I think the shift is coming from when I was like in my senior years. I met one of the lecturers, a guest lecturer in one of my papers, and he shared about like the sustainability transitions is happening right now. So I was motivated, and I was like, my mind was shifted. So I think that is like the key reasons why I'm shifting from finance to sustainable business. Yep.
So, what was it about sustainable business that attracted you?
I think the key like attracted me the most is how people actually like cares about the societies instead of like monies, I guess. Like instead of making more profits for themselves, they create more social valuables for others, especially the vulnerable groups. Because in Vietnam, 95% of our enterprise is small and mediums. So what I'm trying to say is the motivations behind is like to see the enterprise also care about our societies and other peoples, especially like people in the agriculture industry. So I think the key thing is like to have the managers and like the board to understand about the society's values, like how they can create values for others as well.
Do you think that small and medium enterprise basis, I can see some arguments for that making it harder to do sustainability because they're busy like staying afloat and you know they've got families to feed and it makes it that really important. But also, the people who are making the decisions are an awful lot closer to the people who have got the values because they're probably the same people. How does that small medium enterprise relate to the ability to make change and to transition to a sustainable business model?
Yes, that's a really good question because previously, before I get to New Zealand and to study the Master of Sustainable Business, I'm actually working as like a project officer to support the policy transitions in Vietnam. So mostly I connect with the small and medium enterprise and understand their background, their stories, like the decisions why they carry out the transitions. So I think most of it is coming from the connections between the directors or like the head of the companies with the people they're working with. Because not all people having like the same conditions, the same type of like opportunity as others. So I think the managers or like the boards just got like motivated by the stories of their employees and like other people's. The vulnerable peoples, so they feel like they need to do something for the societies.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have something that's not Vietnamese. Let's have the Backstreet Boys. I want it that way. Why this one?
I think it's just like a favorite songs of mine because this is the first English song I listened to when I was a kid. And I'm also like having a chance to come to one of the concerts of Backstreet Boys back in the days with my parents, because they my parents actually got married listening to this song as well. So I think it's having like a lot of like meaningful, like personally for me. Yep.
You are my fire. The one desire, believe when I say I want it that way. But we are two worlds it's too late, but I want it that way. Tell me why it ain't nothing but a part. Tell me why it ain't nothing but a mistake. Tell me why I never wanna hear you say I want it that way. Now I can see that we're falling apart from the way that. Fire, the one desire you are.
You are such an enthusiastic person, and you're so excited to learn, and you have such a curious mind, and you, the way that you express that, I just love it. I love having you in our class. Who were the role models for you that taught you to be that curious person?
Yes, so I think it's my mom, because she always like encouraged me and my brothers to like study more and like to be curious about the world. Because she doesn't want me to be like just understand everything like appear in front of my face, in front of my eyes. She wants me to discover a lot of new things, to be trying like a lot of new stuff, like and experience, like fully experience with like not just like through books or like school. It's just like lifestyle, you know. So that's why I think even when I was like a little kid, she's pushed me to like learn a lot of stuff like sports or even like drawings and like taekwondos, I guess. So she's mostly like my role models to pushing me to like be curious and eager to learn new things.
I love the way that you express that, not just believe everything that's in front of my eyes, because gosh, that's the world that we live in at the moment, where in front of our young people, there's so much in front of their eyes. How do we teach them to get past what they see and actually be curious? Like, how did your mum teach you that?
I think it's coming from her stories, her own experience, because she has a chance to travel a lot. And she tell me a lot about like how other countries, how other people's like reacting to their life, and having the experience of like talking to a lot of people all around the world. And she shared their story with me. So I think for young generations nowadays, they can like learn from others, like especially as coming from their parents, their friends, understand about the experience of like other culture as well. So that's I'm really like grateful for my mom to share the story and be my motivations back in the day. So I hope I can be like a role model for my kids if I have any of them in the future. Yep.
I think that you will be a wonderful role model. And so and that's my next question for you is, like, you've got these beautiful skills and this amazing life approach. If I could magic you 10 years into the future from now, tell me about what's your life like? What are you doing? What's your job? Where are you living?
Yes, so I'm also think about that when it's coming to an end, like for my program here in New Zealand. So I think like 10 years on, I'm gonna live in like maybe European country, I guess, and keep doing like policies analyst for sustainable stuff, because I think policy play a really major role in trying to help the transitions happening. And yes, I hope I can become like how to say it, a role model for someone, and I can have my sharing and my experience to the young generations to motivate and encourage them to keep moving forward and like believe in themselves. So, yep.
I think that actually just, like as a 54-year-old woman, like more than halfway through my life now, not much time left to do my work. I worry about what the future looks like for our young people, but then I hear that kind of talk and I feel hopefulness. You give me hopefulness, Tan.
Are you angling for another birthday song?
Tim, tell us about the person that you interviewed and why did you choose them?
Yes, so I actually like he was one of the high level person in the place where I work before, because I've never had the chance to have a conversation with him, but he has created a lot of things to help Vietnam transitions to a more sustainable way. I have read a lot of his like papers, his interviews, and his work with Europeans banks or like countries representatives all around the world to push the sustainable transitions in my countries. So I think to the podcast, it's like a huge opportunity for me to like reach out to him and ask him for like a private conversations. And luckily, like he actually agreed to my invitation. So I was really grateful for having him. He's actually just retired from the positions in one of the ministry in Vietnam, and he's trying to be a lecturer. And behind the scenes story is like he want to motivate like the young generations to understand like his legacy, what he's trying to do, and his what he is trying to help the countries. And I think it's a really like motivations for the young generations in my country as well. Yep. So that's kind of like the reasons why I'm inviting him to the podcast. Yep. So countries around the world are now mapping out sustainable transitions pathway towards the goals set at the 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference, we all know as the COP26, of achieving the net zero emission goals by 2050. In the most recent study of the energy transitions toward electric vehicle technology, recent advancements by Malik and his partners, it was shown that the electric vehicles are gradually becoming mainstream and replacing internal combustion engines vehicles worldwide, emphasizing the roles of electric vehicles in improving the current environment. The positive outcomes of these transitions cannot be denied. However, Rohana and partners also highlighted the challenges of these transitions through the paper, ensuring just transitions. The electric vehicle revolutions from a human rights perspective, focusing on its impact on society and human rights. The question is, how these transitions will affect society, particularly the vulnerable groups worldwide. As a developing country, Vietnam aims to overcome the middle income trap, becoming a high income developed country by 2045, while also achieving its net zero emissions goal by 2050. To achieve these set goals, the Vietnamese government has most recently issued the Directive 20/CT-TTG on key missions for preventing and solving environmental pollution. A typical example is the roadmap to restrict the fossil fuel vehicles from July 2026 in some areas of Vietnam. This is considered an extremely bold step, especially given that Vietnam is one of the countries that heavily relies on fossil fuels for economic development. To successfully implement these transitions, numerous questions and challenges are likely to arise. In today's interview, we are unpacking the roadmap to forbid fossil fuel vehicles and convert to electric vehicles in Vietnam. Welcome, everyone. I am Thanh Nguyen, currently a master's student of sustainable business at the University of Otago. Joining me today is Dr. Mai Phạm Hoàng, former Director General at Vietnam's Ministry of Planning and Investment, and now the Senior Lecturer at the Academy of Policy and Development. Dr. Pham has led technical team in formulating the Vietnam Green Growth Strategy and the Vietnam Action Plan to implement the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. Today, we will explore how his perspective has evolved from a policymaker to an academic researcher, and whether he sees this kind of mandate as visionary, risky, or both. Dr. Pham, welcome.
Thank you, Time. It is a pleasure to be here with you today.
Thank you, Dr. Pham. So before we dive into the main topic today, I would love to start with you, Dr. Pham. Let us know a little bit about yourself
How have you been
and evolving with sustainable business issue.
Okay, thank you. As you know that in 2012, I was assigned to lead the Vietnamese technical team to join the Rio de Janeiro Summit on Sustainable Development. Since then, I have coordinated the formation of several sustainable development strategies in Vietnam, including Green Growth Strategy, Sustainable Development Goals 2030, Climate Finance Framework.
Yes. So based on your experience, from your perspective, what are the challenges for implementing those strategies in Vietnam or all around the world?
I think the challenges could be how to balance the interest of people, business, and the goal of achieving net zero by 2050, and how the government should play to achieve such balance. I can take the case of air pollution of Hanoi as an example. Hanoi has long been known as a historical, famous tourist destination, but recently Hanoi topped global air pollution charts, not once, but repeatedly due to the emission of large number of gasoline vehicles. At the same time, gasoline vehicles have been means of living and transportation of Hanoi residents. The question is how to replace major source of air pollution and at the same time guaranteeing the needs of transportation of more than 10 million people living in Hanoi.
Yes, that is quite of a questions. As you have mentioned, you notice several changes that need to be made to improve the current scenes of Vietnam in general and Hanoi in particular. So, as a veteran in policy making, what need to be done for Hanoi and Vietnam?
I think the increased number of vehicles, particularly those failing to meet emission standards, has worsened air quality in major cities in Vietnam, like Hanoi. According to statistical data from consultancy firm BNC Company, from the beginning of 2025 to July 18 of 2025, Hanoi has only 34% of the days with good air quality. Therefore, restrictions on gasoline vehicles are necessary to address the pollution problem and create an opportunity for electric vehicles as a cleaner alternative.
Yes, like you said, Hanoi needs to address the air pollution challenges to improve the living conditions for the people. So recently, Hanoi has made the first move. The city is now planning to restrict internal combustion engines vehicles in several key districts. Can you help us to clarify the policy, Arch?
Hanoi authority has approved the policy that from July the 1st, 2026, no more motorbikes and scooters using fossil fuel will be allowed in the inner area. That is considered as one of the first significant measures in the process of transitioning to green transportation in large urban areas. From January 2028 onward, no motorbike and scooter and restriction on personal cars using fossil fuel will be allowed to circulate in the extended inner area, and from 2030 onward, continue to expand implementation in the whole city area. To facilitate the transition, the government has planned to organize propaganda, raise public awareness, mobilize resources, and issue policy mechanisms to support businesses and individuals during the transition. Thus, it can be seen this is not an immediate ban, but a managed transition, zone by zone, vehicle class by vehicle class, best with infrastructure, finance, and fairness. This is how Hanoi turned headline ambition into everyday improvements.
Yes, certainly any change will have its own set of difficulty and challenges, right? One of the biggest financial challenges for these transitions can be seen as the financial arrangements. From your perspective, what are the most significant financial challenges for these transitions to happen?
In Hanoi alone, there are currently over 9.2 million vehicles, including 1.1 million cars and nearly 7 million motorbikes. According to statistics data, a basic new electrical motorbike costs around 18 to 25 million Vietnamese dong, while many low-income riders rely on gasoline bike with a price at around 5 to 10 million Vietnamese dong. So it is clearly that very difficult for those people to make the decision to change to a costly vehicle that serves the same as the low-cost vehicle for their work. In addition, the higher initial cost of electrical motorbike compared to gasoline bike overshadow long-term savings, further deterring potential buyers. This financial gap significantly affects the decision of Hanoian, especially those from low-income groups, to switch from gasoline bike to electric motorbike.
Thank you, Dr. Fa, for that great information. We can all see that the convergence cost is quite significant. And we can also see the case from other countries like Germany, China, Japan in the transitions towards the electric vehicles. Of course, we certainly cannot forget the infrastructure and technological feasibility. What are your thoughts on the obstacles of infrastructure and technological feasibility to perform this transition?
Yes, in this case, the level of dependence on public transport among Hanoi people will increase significantly if this policy put into operation. However, in reality, the infrastructure system and public transport system are not guaranteed to meet the set goals. According to statistics, Hanoi public transport system currently handles about 19% of people trips, while the rest are made by private vehicles. According to the forecast in the Hanoi Capital Master Plan, by 2030, public transport will meet 35 to 40%, and private vehicle will account for 60 to 65%. Thus, the vast majority of people will still have to use private vehicles to travel for many years to come. With nearly 10 million gasoline motorbikes retiring, Hanoi has not yet developed a specific plan to handle this vehicle in a sustainable and safe way. This will for sure be a particularly significant challenge for Hanoi and other cities in general when implementing this transition. Additionally, the charging station system and infrastructure are not yet guaranteed to facilitate this transition. Most people who own electrical vehicles, motorbike, often charge their vehicle at home, which does not ensure fire safety. That is one of the most significant technical challenges in this transition.
Yes, aside from these challenges of financial, infrastructure, and technological, what do you think are the other obstacles that Hanoi might face when applying this policy into actions?
I think even though the regulation is in place, there is still much confusion about financial support for switching to electrical vehicles. Hanoi's authorities have worked closely with electrical vehicle manufacturers to create policies for exchanging gasoline vehicles to EV or to provide subsidies for Hanoi people. On top of that, there are also some psychological hurdles for people thinking about electrical vehicles, particularly worrying about the range anxiety, which is being running out battery, even though most of our daily trip are very short. Plus, the higher upfront cost of electric motorcycles compared to gas ones overshadows the long-term savings, making potential buyers think twice.
Yes, it can be seen that to implement these transitions process, we might face several difficulties. However, I don't think that we will be deterred by these challenges. As a long-time policymaker, what other points do you think we need to improve in order to carry out this transition?
I think in order to solve above challenges, Hanoi's authority needs to develop communication programs to raise public awareness of transport a transition process, emphasizing the major orientations in the goal of sustainable development and protecting public health. At the same time, it is necessary to conduct a survey of the number of existing gasoline-powered motorbikes, classify them by age and use status, and develop appropriate support packages. The city also needs to develop policies to subsidize and support loans to buy electrical vehicles for the poor households and low-income workers. It is necessary to have a specific plan to improve infrastructure and enhance the public transport system to meet the needs when implementing this conversion program. It is necessary to ensure that the increased demand for public transport will be met, thereby creating a premise to have the conversion process become more effective and practical. In addition, I think the city needs to establish a system of public charging station located at gas station, parking lots, residential areas, and commercial centers to support a wide range of vehicle, avoid monopolies, and to ensure competitiveness and convenience for the public.
And of course, we cannot mention the manufacturing business. What are the key support that we should deliver to this business in order to support the transitions process more smoothly?
Besides the people, electric vehicle manufacturers and service providers also play an important role in this transition. Hanoi needs to encourage this business to implement programs to exchange old vehicles for new ones and reduce the price of electrical vehicles, especially for low-income groups. Develop appropriate support policy to build charging stations throughout the cities is another concern for the city authorities. This groundbreaking shift will open a new market, create an urgent demand for professional vehicle maintenance and repair services.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Fa, for your sharings and your insights. So, in order to wrap things up, any final thoughts from you, Dr. Fa?
I think reducing the number of gasoline vehicles in Hanoi is a significant direction in the goal of sustainable development and protecting public health. However, for these major policies to take effect, careful preparation is necessary in terms of institution, technology, and infrastructure, especially ensuring a fair transition process for those directly affected is crucial, as they are also a decisive factor in the policy success.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Pham, for your sharings and your insights as veteran policymakers, as well as a senior lecturer at one of the universities in Vietnam right now. So, in conclusions, this interview represents a significant transition for Vietnam, particularly in the context of its efforts to achieve the net zero emissions by 2050 and become a high-income country by 2045. However, this transition is not a flip of a switch. We need to recognize the reality of these transitions and the difficulties ahead. My thanks to Dr. Mai Phat Hoa for sharing from both the theoretical side and the practical side. Indeed, I, as well as the audience who are listening to this interview, have understood more about the transitions process taking place in Vietnam. If you have any questions or comments to send to the guest Dr. Phan today, please send them to us via the emails luktengn014@gmail.com. Once again, thank you, Dr. Phan, for being here with us today. Thank you for listening and for caring about the transitions that are not just greener, but fairer. I'm Thanh Nguyen. This is the story of Vietnam transitions towards a sustainable future. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
And there was so much in that. That was intense. What was your biggest takeaway from the interview?
I think the biggest takeaway I can get is like the transitions cannot happen right away. It needs time, and especially in the countries like highly rely on fossil fuel vehicles like Vietnam. So it's really hard to apply policies like directly it affect to people, especially vulnerable groups. So what Dr. Phan has shared in the podcast is we need to have times to keep track with the systems to see like the change from the smallest step, and then it's making the decisions of like a bigger change in later on in the near futures, I guess. So I think it's like from my perspective, his insight and sharings helped me to understand like policies, transitions takes time, especially for vulnerable groups.
I think that is a beautiful story to have taken out of his story. He's an incredibly inspirational man. Do you see that as, you know, thinking about the direction that you're headed in your own life, can you see that will influence your own practice?
Of course, because I think it's really important to change my practice as well, because heading to the net zero emissions of Vietnam, I think people need to have a better understanding and like a higher awareness of what we're trying to do, especially like contributing to the environment of the whole world, not only Vietnam. So from his sharings and his insights, I'm also motivated, and I'm also like having the thoughts of like changing my behavior and practices in the future. Yep.
Oh, I think that is absolutely beautiful.
Let's take the second of your music choices. I'm going to have a go of saying it is Phan Quym Em, Hello Vietnam. Is that close enough?
Yeah, it's enough.
Why this song?
I think the first song is like coming from personal like interest, but this one I just want to introduce my country, because that's mainly about my like my podcast trying to say. So the song is actually like introductions of Vietnam to the friends all around the world, and help you guys understand more about my countries, about the cultures, and I think it's already covered in the song as well. So yep.
This name that is difficult to say, it was given me the day I was born. Want to know about the stories of the empire of old, my eyes say more of me than what you dare to say. All I know of you is all the sides of war. A film by Coppola, the helicopters roar. One day I'll touch your soul. One day I'll finally know your soul. One day I'll come to you to say hello. Tell me all about my color, my hair, and my little feet that have carried me every mile of the way. Want to see your house, your streets, show me all I do not know. Wooden sampans, floating markets, light of gold. All I know of you is the sights of war. A film by Coppola, helicopters roar. One day I'll touch your soul. One day I'll finally know your soul. One day I'll come to you to say hello.
Definition for sustainability?
My go-to definitions for sustainability is to, from myself only, is like creating social values for the vulnerable groups and also protecting the environment. Yep.
Oh, I think that is actually a really good definition for sustainability. Is that a common? Have you brought that from your cultural values, or has it been influenced by cultural values in Aotearoa since you've been here? Where has that come from?
Yes, it's obviously coming from cultural values, because what I can, from my understanding, because I'm preparing for an interview before that, I'm preparing for an interview for my scholarships. So I learned about the culture of Kaitia Kitanga, from the Maoris and from the Kiwis, and it's having like some similarities to the cultures of Vietnamese as well, because we really care about our forests and our nature. So what is motivating me, or like to have a broader understanding of sustainability, is like to protect the environment, learn more about the peoples, especially like how we can create the values to the vulnerables. So yep, I think it's mostly coming from cultures and the similarity between Maoris and Vietnamese.
Beautiful.
I have some questions to end the show. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Oh, wow. I think my biggest success is sharing my story with the New Zealand governments to help them understand the needs of sustainable transitions in Vietnam. So I achieved this full scholarships to study here in University of Otago. It was really a pleasure, and I'm really grateful to have the understanding from the New Zealand government to understand about the stories that I'm trying to deliver, the necessities of people who work in the sustainable fields. Yeah, that it's like a really a must thing to have in Vietnam so that I can promote the transitions more in my country as a, like a developing countries. We're trying to reach the growth we need, but also like to keep like in track, keep track with like the what we did to the environment. Yep.
I'll ask the other way around in a minute, but what's the number one thing that New Zealand can learn from Vietnam's approach to sustainability?
Oh, okay. I think is to have more of like more of sharings from the enterprise, because I see the similarities in the in both countries. It's like we are both agricultures countries. So I think is the government need to have like more need to listen to more sharings from the enterprise in the agriculture industries to understand like the difficulties, how can this government support these enterprise to have like a better or smooth ways for the transitions. That is from my experience.
And the other way, what's the number one thing you're taking home?
Number one thing I'm taking home is like how to raise the awareness of people in like in what we are trying to do right now in helping our environment, because I seeing like New Zealand's are the best in it's the best like countries in promoting the sustainable. I'm seeing what you guys are doing right now in Vietnam. We don't have that, like the sharings or like the raising awareness program for the people, so a lot of people still like having zero ideas of like what sustainable is, why like the government's pushing like to ban the fossil fuel vehicles. So I think the most important things to carry back home is to learn how to promote the sustainable and like raising the awareness of the of people in Vietnam.
What's your superpower?
My superpower. Sometimes I'm being like a perfectionist, so I really want everything to be perfect, I guess. So I don't see it as a superpower. Sometimes it's like a knife, you know. It can hurt you, but it can help you to like do great stuff.
What's the biggest challenge or opportunity that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Oh, okay. Biggest challenge I can see is from my perspective back now is to coming back to Vietnam and like create like a significant transitions or like significant impact to the people there. Because I can see a lot of difficulties coming up right now. The awareness, the difference in cultures and the policy as well, the government system is really different back home. But I think it's also like a motivation for me to try my best and create like a lot of impacts to help my country. Yep.
What a great challenge. And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
It's really hard because I've never been in these positions of like giving advice before. But I think one of the most recent advice I get is to be yourself, to be more to be confident of like what you are doing right now. Believe in yourself and like just trusting the process, and hard work's really gonna pays off. Yep.
Sounds good, Moira.
Tan, if I knew your mum, I'd give her a big hug and say thank you for making such a fine man. I'm really excited to see where you go in the future. I think that wherever you end up, they're going to be really lucky. Thank you for your massive contribution to classroom life. And thanks also for choosing the University of Otago. We've really appreciated having you here. And I wish you all the best from now on. Kia ora.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Maria, for having me on the podcast today. It's my pleasure. And yeah, thank you so much.
Cora, thank you, Tan. We're going out to Cora, politician.
Politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? For all of us. Pale, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah. Can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah, for all of us. You can talk the talk, but will you walk the walk? Will you bring us comfort? Will you bring us comfort? You can talk the talk, but will you walk the walk, or will you bring us comfort? Or will you bring us comfort? Pale, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? For all of us. Pale, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision? Can you make a right decision for all of us? For all of us. Pale, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah. Talk, but will you walk the walk, or will you bring us comfort? Or will you bring us comfort? You can talk the talk, but will you walk the walk, or will you bring us comfort? Or will you bring us comfort?
Listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, brought to you by Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. We thank them for their support. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. Tang Wen brought his episode of Coming Up for Air. With Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Ma te wā.
Can you make a right decision?
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.